I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenwill.
Whew. It's been a while. Memo, 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 me.
I know. I start that intro and I'm like, I hope that I remember how to do all of it.
You did so good. I'm not sure remember how to do it. Thor the Dark World, Thor the Dark World, Thor the Dark World. Just warming up. Just warming up. Thor the Dark World.
We are...
Malekith.
It's Malekith. It's wild, like... We're on the cusp of this crazy MCU year, and we were texting last night, and it just got me thinking. I mean, we will have an Avengers movie next year for the first time since we started this podcast, which is wild.
Yeah, think about that. We started a second. You texted me where you were the last time that happened, which
like,
was
and what? I remember. Do you remember where you were specifically when you watched the Endgame trailer?
So that would have been late 2018 or early 2019. Is that right?
Yeah,
late 2018, I bet. Because the movie was April of 19.
Right, yeah.
No, I don't remember where I was, but I would have been... Yeah. Do you actually remember physically where you were sitting?
I do. I remember I was sitting at our kitchen table and... the apartment we lived in when I was in law school. And
heck yeah.
Like the trailer where it, you know, you see Tony in space and he's recording the message for
with the helmet.
Pepper. Yeah. Oh man.
I saw that it was X amount of years since the Infinity War trailer, the one where they're all running at the camera and there was an idea.
Oh yeah.
And somebody posted
the trailer.
From the meme from Don't Look Up where it said, wow, we really had it all, didn't we? You know, I'm talking about the end of that movie, that
meme.
Oh,
yeah.
But I remember that. I remember that. And I, you know, when Avengers Endgame ended, we always talked about how they needed some space. I don't know that I ever felt in my heart that it was going to be 7 years, right? Like, don't you think there's been so much space that as soon as this trailer drops, it's going to explode? It's been so long.
Yeah. Man, it's just weird because like I think COVID had a longer impact than we appreciate, not just in terms of production time and stuff, but like you think about where we were in 2019 when we had the conclusion of the Infinity Saga and we had Rise of Skywalker. Mm-hmm. Like we had like these film franchises that were really like firing on all cylinders. Even like whatever you think of Rise of Skywalker, it was a huge thing when it came out. Like it was a massive moment. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really, like it feels like there's a bit of a gap even in just like the like theater franchises. Like there have still been big movies like Barbie and Oppenheimer, Superman, but I was just thinking, like, yeah. But as like,
but yeah, what gets close to those moments? Probably nothing.
Until maybe
Mission Impossible, Doomsday. Maybe like that. That's
yeah.
On,
but
on
even then, it's like I don't think people feel like they need to go like.
Yeah, it's definitely not the cultural
dress
moment.
Up and yeah. It's a there's something about
yeah a Harry Potter finale maybe yeah I'm trying to think what else
yeah I mean I'm even Rings. Glad like I, like part of it is I think it was the streaming wars and the way that like Disney Plus came into the mix and HBO Max where certain things were kind of living in both places or they were moving more into like serious structures. But I was even talking to Candace the other day, just seeing that we have some Star Wars movies on the docket for the first time since 2019 feels really nice. Like we've got like the Mandalorian movie. We've got that Ryan Gosling movie. And then the, what's the one with Rey? I forget what the title is, if they have one, but
the Ryan it's like the, Gosling one's called Starfighter. Is that right? I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Dude, that is such a good point. What are the largest film IPs in the world right now? It's like the Avengers, not even just Marvel, but the Avengers as a team, Star Wars. But what else would be up there as far as cultural moving the needle? People dress up to go see it. It's talked about. Yeah, that's not Mission Impossible. I guess Harry Potter back in the day would have been something with that. The funny thing is, the other thing I would toss out is a Spider-Man movie is probably the other
right.
cultural needle mover, which is also next year, which is just insane.
Yeah.
And then yeah. like Disney, if you think about that from Disney's perspective, that they haven't had Star Wars or Marvel, you know, like their biggest tent poles
right.
haven't had films. Maybe you even toss out the fact that there's a Toy Story movie next year. That would be another one, maybe? Like,
yeah,
for them,
yeah.
like, that's about as big of a year as they'll ever have, right? Probably.
Well, and that's also crazy to me, like, talking about a new Spider-Man movie, because as I was going back through my rewatch, I'm coming up on Far From Home.
I'm up on Homecoming right now. That's where I'm coming up.
Oh, nice. Man, Homecoming's so good.
I just got introduced to Spider-Man in Civil War, which is, like, the best...
Yeah.
The Civil War introduction of Black Panther and Spider-Man might be the single greatest strength of that movie. In one of my favorite movies of all time, unbelievable film, the fact that they nailed Black Panther and Spider-Man so perfectly is miraculous.
The Spider-Man character introduction, like the cut to Queens with the All J song, is as good as any other character introduction in the entire
MCU. I have chills right now. When
it's
when
like
Natasha
Back
just
Black,
says, "Well, where's
RDJ
yours?
Level.
Where's yours?" And he just kind of smiles and leans back, and then, dun, 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 dun. Oh my gosh, I have chills right now! Holy crap! Like, oh, full body, it's hitting me. You know what I realized too, watching that movie? The standouts in that movie for me are Tony and Steve Rogers, Captain America, their battle, the introduction of Spider-Man and Black Panther, and then Natasha is sneaky good in that movie. That she's kind of flip-flopping sides. And you know what hit Annika and I when we were watching that? I think we feel the void. They're all gone. They're all gone. Black Panther died in real life horrifically.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is a different thing. We haven't had one in a while. Okay, that's maybe the one exception. But Natasha's gone, Tony's gone, and Steve is gone. Like, so it's almost impossible to pick up when you take four of your five main characters and they're just off the table. You know, that's hard. That's a hard thing to do.
It's also
and Thor,
like,
and Thor and Hulk aren't in that movie. So
right.
I wasn't really
thinking
about them in that movie. So like for the future going forward, all those people are off the table.
And I mean, until, the thing about Thor, because I was thinking about this too, watching through, like obviously Thor had his big arrival in Ragnarok in terms of him kind of becoming the character that I think a lot of people really, or that resonated with people. But even then, like that's a separate movie from kind of like what's going on with the rest of the core Earth heroes. And then in Infinity War, he's kind of off on his own journey until the very end. So he's really interacting with those characters. And then in Endgame, we see the most of it.
But he's so bitter at the beginning.
Yeah.
He's not talking. intentionally. And then they kind of like Fat Thor thing.
They don't view him as really a functioning member of the team. Like,
right.
When you watch it, it's like, so
what a good point.
I think that as much as I love Thor, and I think Thor is a core part of the MCU, he doesn't really fill the void that you're talking about.
It's not as much connective glue from him. He's
right.
He's a little more of the glue between the cosmic and the Earth stuff, but yeah, it doesn't, he can't ever fill the leader of the Avengers thing, no doubt.
It is like, just as I'm, because I obviously watched Endgame and just reflecting, like, the two thoughts that I think are appropriate as we're looking towards next year. One, what I was going to say earlier is it's just wild that we had a Spider-Man movie every 2 years, starting in 2017. But now we haven't had one in, we won't have had one for 5 years when
21? Brandon
8 comes out.
Okay.
But second, like, we've talked about this in different ways, but watching the whole thing with Black Widow thrown in, I really am grateful that no matter what happens, what has happened, what does happen after Endgame, that is a fully complete, like totally satisfying series of films. Like the story just, it's like a total full circle moment. If you with never Black get Widow any more follow-up with Black Widow in there, like with the exception of like the post-credit scene for Black Widow. But otherwise it's like, everything really feels like it gets its due. Like,
that's right where I am right now at Black Widow. We're halfway through the movie. Yeah. We had to pause it last night. And dude, my reflection on that is, you know how we talked about they handle the setup to Avengers so well, getting all these individual movies and then it's the Avengers. Then they handle the post of Battle of New York fallout so perfectly. But if there was one gap that we felt like they had, it was that Age of Ultron and then through Civil War, like, are we feeling the effects of Civil War? Because then the ending of it with like Ragnarok and kind of the build up to Infinity War and Endgame are all pretty perfect. So we always kind of debated, is that gap? And I just, every time I watch it, I'm reminded that now that gap, especially because of the work Black Widow does, which is huge, that gap now feels pretty complete. Like when you go from Civil War, and like the whole thing with Civil War is it's got a lighthearted tone because they're not really wanting to kill each other and you're not really feeling the effects. But you then think of that lens that we always talk about, how they're broken up by Infinity War. Black Widow really helps because Ross is directly looking for her right after she leaves in the last scene with Tony. So like it's a perfect follow-up there. My point is now I feel like that gap is also complete. So I'm with you. The whole saga is perfect. Yeah. And that actually helped the one gap, I think, that we were like, huh, what were they doing and how are they running away? And now it's like you forget how much of the beginning of Black Widow is she's running from Ross. Like when she gets blown up by Taskmaster, she thinks it's Ross.
Yeah, man. Also, Taskmaster
rocks.
Really is pretty great in Black Widow.
Taskmaster, like, looks and sounds so cool.
Like I still like I like the updated costume in Thunderbolts, and there's a part of me that would have liked more with that character. But it's also an ensemble movie, and you can only do so much. And
I've always said that people complain not enough time. I'm like, man, the chase in the street is pretty sick. Where she, I guess, is using the bow and arrow. And then the first attack on the bridge is pretty sweet. And she's mimicking it. And then you get a cool fight at the end.
And it's a perfect level villain for Natasha.
Like, yeah.
Who is kind of, she's been shown as like the best like hand-to-hand fighter in terms of just like sheer talent, not like taking into account super soldier strength and stuff. It works so well, and I think so much of it is Robert Downey Jr. Like,
hold on,
as the glue, and
that's
the other, like, just the end of, the end of that saga. Like, you realize how much the stars really were, Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, and
what a takeaway! That was exactly my takeaway to Annika. I think, look, here, I'll give you a hot take first too. I like Sam Wilson as Falcon. I don't think I've fully bought him as a Captain America figure. And I think that when I look at where I'm at right now, watching through the saga again, that's my takeaway too. The biggest thing that's so difficult is the entire core of it is Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans. And we don't have either. And I think it's almost like a quarterback leaving a team and then the team being really bad. It's almost like that, where like you don't know the effects of how much Robert Downey Jr. was Marvel until he's gone. And then you're like, oh,
yeah.
It's not just the filmmakers and stuff. It was him. Like, if it had been anybody, it's Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. and the lack of Tony Stark. Like the two of them. Like you need that. It's charming charisma. Even again, I'm on Civil War right now, so that's what I'm thinking about. But their interactions are must-see television. I could watch the two of them talk for hours. The pen scene, yeah. I could just watch it. I could just watch them talking.
Yeah.
And you just don't have that anymore. That's tough. But that's going to lead to my point in a minute here. Anyways, I'm with you. Man. Sorry, I'm hijacking it, but we haven't talked in weeks.
No.
And that's the exact same takeaway I had. Exact same takeaway.
And I don't like... What I'm grateful for is that doesn't leave me with this like, oh man, like I wish that we still had that, because I'm so grateful for how well it ended. Like,
right.
I don't want it to peter out. Like, I don't want it to be something where it's like, oh man, if you just watch till here, it's great. And then it kind of goes downhill, because the way that they did it, it really does feel like everything after Endgame in some ways is bonus. And it's like, I took a break, like a fairly long break this time between Endgame and starting WandaVision, because I kind of wanted to, like, because I think that they, like, I would roll from like one thing into the next for the Infinity Saga, but I do kind of think it's closing one book and opening another book. And then you start to see like, oh, we get more with Wanda, which is great. And it goes back in and like adds stuff to the Infinity Saga, like the What Is Grief moment. And you get stuff like that all along with all these different characters. And this is not me downplaying certain Phase 4 or 5 projects that I think are as good or better than a lot of Infinity Saga projects. I just think, to me, it's like, okay, well, yeah, that is the thing. Mm-hmm. That I think made this universe resonate so much with people. Like, mm-hmm. even if you're someone that loves Guardians movies more than any other Marvel movies, I still think when you think of the MCU, you're thinking of Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. on some level. Like, that is just the... Wow. It's the core, which does make me curious for like what we have coming, as we're kind of shifting to what 2026 and beyond will be.
And back to your starting thought, it's such a gift that we don't have to give any disclaimers anymore. It's like Lord of the Rings in that you're right. If you stop it, like when my daughter's old enough, she could stop at Endgame and it's a complete thing. And I don't have to, you can still just view it that way. You don't have to try to add to it. Now, hopefully the next stuff is also awesome, you know?
But yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing. Hey, before we get into our most anticipated projects of 2026, you texted me two other thoughts about your rewatch that I quickly want you to bring up here. Last night, you texted me 2 points. Do you remember what they were?
Oh, yeah.
Sam?
So
one first, positive, one negative.
Yeah, well, both positive in a way.
Yeah.
But one is kind of backhanded.
Sure.
So first, I watched through WandaVision with Betty. She watched the whole thing with me.
Okay.
Loved it. Had great feedback. I got to the finale, and it's funny because she is at this phase where she kind of won't settle down unless I'm like doing the walking and kind of bouncing and rocking thing. Mm-hmm. So I was like right in front of the TV watching the finale, like when you're like six watching cartoons or something. Mm-hmm. And man, I like, after watching the whole series and really paying attention to it and then watching the finale, I think it's a good finale. I think you know what? This is actually going to, this will dovetail into my
favorite
second
sound
point
I've ever
here,
had.
But I think that they really do, like, so much of what we look back on with that finale as being disappointing, I think relates to the crazy, like, week to week speculation mill that was going, where it was like everyone was so far down these rabbit holes by the time you got to the next episode. And then by the end, it was like, what are they going to do with all of these things? But the show really did a good job of, like, for the most part, here's a mystery. Within a couple of episodes, that mystery is kind of solved. It's not like they just left all these things dangling and then had to deal with them all in the finale, which is kind of how people talk about that show. Yep. Like, really, all they had...
I agree.
I thought that it looked... Like, I think that the Vision fight is actually really fun because we don't... One thing that I noticed in the Infinity Saga this time around is, like, you really only see Vision truly in action in Age of Ultron. And he's only in the back third or quarter of that movie. Like, mm-hmm. Civil War, he's kind of barely... He's holding back because he's not trying to hurt anybody.
Yeah, and I love his character in that movie, but yes, he's not fighting.
Yeah, and which is fine because I think that a lot of the great stuff from that character is the dialogue. But it is fun to see him fly around and have a battle, and, like, that looks good to me for it being a series, like a Disney Plus show. And the emotional beats hit so hard for me this time. Like, the...
Welcome to fatherhood. Get ready. Get ready. Have you gotten to Love and Thunder yet?
No.
Give it some time. Just give it some time.
I've been thinking about that. Yeah, I
By the time Betty is two... That scene will be harder and harder for you to watch, no doubt.
Well, and I'm running even lower on sleep than usual, and every time I'm tired, I will watch movies and I can just tell that I'm, like, more emotionally affected just by sheer exhaustion.
Yeah.
So that may have been part of it also, but, like, having watched Infinity War not long ago, like within the last couple of weeks, and that scene always hits me so hard, the final scene with Wanda and Vision. Then just, like, getting to the very end and seeing Wanda have to make the decision to, like, end the Hex and lose them, and that final scene with Vision where he's just like
what
he turns the light back on after she turns it off is just...
You're gonna,
like,
make me cry right now.
Dude, it's so good. It's one of the best, like, that little moment it's like, speaking of Civil War, I think of these kind of just great character beat moments in the MCU. And one I always think about is that scene between Tony and Steve when he brings the pens out. And it's not even, like, it's not nearly that emotional, but it's just a great, like, this is who these characters are. And their chemistry is so good at that point. And yeah, man, it made me really hope that we do get some kind of reunion between Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany, because they made some, like, real magic in that show, no pun intended, where it was like they went from it being great to it being, like, as good as really any other dynamic in the franchise.
So I briefly want to respond to this. Obviously, this is music to my ears. You know that I've been trumpeting this for 5 years now, 4 years now. So on the visual front, really quickly, I think people just underestimate how difficult some of these visual things are for any studio, any VFX artist, anywhere in the world. I just did an episode for Friends from Work Plus users last week where I was talking about there are some visual things in Stranger Things that aren't perfect. And that's Netflix's biggest show ever. There's a scene in Pluribus where Carol goes onto a roof and it's clearly CGI'd and doesn't look unbelievable. And here's the thing. Those are the biggest shows in their respective studios. My point is every freaking studio struggles with some of this stuff, with budgets versus VFX. It's not a Marvel-specific thing. So yes,
right.
It doesn't bother me more in the Vision fight than it does in Stranger Things when they're climbing the telephone pole. It's the same thing. So first of all, I think people, I don't know where this expectation comes from that all these shows just look perfect. I think it's only the shows that don't have to use any of that. Spoiler alert, with a Vision versus Vision battle, you have to use some special effects. There's no way to, like when we go to another planet, there's no way for them to go to another planet, y'all. So there's going to be CGI. So CGI issues, I'm kind of attuned to them, but I've definitely lowered my stance on being aggressively upset about it because every single studio has a problem. That's the first thing. Second thing, there are levels to my emotional investment. I don't know how to explain it. I am sometimes really into a project, but it doesn't move me like a few do. I think it's, if you want to get really deep psychology here for a second, the way I'm wired, I'm not as afraid of death. I don't think that's not my biggest fear, but my fear is like this, that time has moved on and you kind of miss the moment or you can't ever get it back. It's the reason why the end of Toy Story 3, like the way Quentin Tarantino actually talked about this last week, just makes him cry. The 5 minutes at the end of the movie makes it, I can't watch it as, I'm gonna cry right now. As he's playing with the toys and he says, Woody's the most loyal. And it's like, it's a reflection of, oh, he's older now. He's going to school. And I have that same fear. I'm getting really emotional. I have that same fear with like my parents, like missing out on eras that you can't go back. And I'm going to have it with my daughter. It's already weird to have her be four, almost five, and think about, oh, like that's already different than it was. Like how many more times am I going to get this one thing? Dude, I'm getting way too emotional. I think that's what bothers me so much about the end of WandaVision is like this, she's saying goodbye to like a moment she should have had and she's not going to ever get to have. And Vision, who's like just this projection of her mind, also doesn't know his role in this. And I think that just like tucking the kids in, saying goodbye to them, and then them kissing as it fades out is like, it's so painful for me because I'm like, oh, what could have been? Like we missed the moment. And or like it passed us now and that's it. And their performances, like you said, it's how I went from, oh, she's a cool side character to probably my single most invested relationship is her in this universe now with Tony gone. Or them two together. If we could ever get them together, it's because all those things just leave me bothered. So yeah, some things are sad. Like Tony Stark dying at the end of Endgame is sad, but I feel this one more. And I feel it like at Love and Thunder at the end, because when Jane's going, it's like, oh man, like, you know what I mean? It's more that than it is that she's suddenly gone, I guess.
Wow.
That's not what I thought we'd be talking about today. Holy crap.
No, I got emotional there. I have the same, even from when it first came out, the end of The Return of the King has always gotten me, like when they're all saying goodbye to Frodo. This.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can't watch that scene when he's telling him he has to leave anyways. That's what I mean. It's like, I also can't watch when Vesper.
Like it's not even a sad thing. Like it's a good thing. Like, you know, no one's dying, but it's still like.
Yep. Yeah. I also really get bothered. You bow to no one thing.
Oh man. Yeah.
There's just moments like that. Like the Toy Story one, here's a really dumb one. Like I still get emotional with Mulan when the Emperor bows to her at the end.
Oh yeah, that is a great scene.
Stuff like that. But yeah, for sure, the more appropriate to this conversation is the Frodo connection. I almost can't watch that part. Not because he's going to a heaven of sorts. It's a great thing. And he has no place here anymore. It's true. He has no role left. So it's the right call, but it's still just bothers me to my core that he's willingly choosing to leave his friends, I guess.
Yeah.
And they'll never get back what was pre the books. You know what I'm saying? This story, it'll never be that innocent again.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's like if you don't have that moment, then I think it can devalue what came before.
Right. If they go back, then you're like, it's never as powerful. It never would hit you the same way.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to your point, I think that's part of the reason why like Toy Story 4 was which was great. It was.
Yes, we've talked about that.
But it was just kind of a strange thing because it didn't really feel, it felt like inappropriate almost.
Right. Like Quentin Tarantino says, he's not going to watch it. Because are there more stories they can tell in the universe? Yeah, you could tell infinite amounts of toy stories. But that was such a perfect ending to like the best trilogy maybe ever, as far as all three movies having 100% for what they're trying to do. It's kind of like, do we need a different story now? Like we passed them on, you know, that's how it goes, you know, Andy's gotten older.
In the context of WandaVision, it made me really interested to see how Multiverse of Madness plays for me on this watch, because I felt like this time the finale was such a good ending. And I do think, you know, there's always that tension of like, on the one hand, they clearly set stuff up in WandaVision that is not dealt with at the end of WandaVision. Like, and I think it would have been a little bit weird for them to make this whole big thing of the Scarlet Witch and how dangerous it is. And then it just be like, oh, never mind. It's fine. Like that, I think would have been.
I think every time I get through this process, I'm with you. Multiverse of Madness is a little less jarring because, you texted me there's actually a line that it says the Scarlet Witch is destined to destroy this world.
Yeah.
That's not something you just say lightly and then just quick go back to she's all good, you know?
And you know, like they could never pick that up again because you could look at Multiverse of Madness and say that, you know, she was going to and then she makes the other call. But what I also kind of loved and was texting you is that you see I could see a world where, especially knowing the writers that we have on Doomsday and Secret Wars, I could see where they use Multiverse of Madness as the like, yes, this is kind of what the Scarlet Witch is like prophesied to be in terms of this being of like destructive power and how she gives into the Darkhold and all that. But I also wonder if we haven't actually seen the end of that prophecy, because you've talked about how you think Elizabeth Olsen will show up in some meaningful role within either Doomsday or Secret Wars.
Oh, 100%. I'm so sure of it. Throw me in a dumpster and cover me in chicken guts.
It would also be, I don't know. It would be great to see, like I said, the follow-up on that side, but also like the Vision piece of that. I just, man, it's such a, if anything, like that's the part about Multiverse of Madness that's a little bit harder for me. Like I don't feel her connection with the boys the same way I do her connection with Vision, just because.
Totally.
You know, it's like just kind of a strange.
Right. They're also not real. I don't think you're supposed to, though. They're not real. Yeah. Whereas Vision was someone we knew. So even if it's a projection, we have emotional attachment to him already. The kids are literally born in like a day or whatever. It's not. Yeah. Which is literally what's said in Multiverse of Madness. I don't think you're supposed to feel the same level for sure.
So that's the thing is I'm glad they did it that way, because if they went back to the well with the Vision thing in Multiverse of Madness, it would have been like really replaying the hits. But the other thing I texted you.
Yeah, just briefly, because all of this is perfectly setting up 2026, all my conversation. We've now laid the foundation, which is great. Yeah. This one doesn't, so just real brief.
Yeah. I am actually midway through Falcon Winter Soldier right now. Mm-hmm. And I think my thoughts so far into the post-endgame stuff is like Marvel maybe shot themselves in the foot by announcing so many projects before any of them came out that it just started to feel like, okay, like next on the list. And we were just running through like, not even just the year that we had so many projects, but just knowing kind of where each of these fell in this huge slate. I think kind of devalued them a little bit in the moment. And like to your point earlier, I have just been thinking like, what if this were more like what like James Gunn is doing with like the DC shows or any show, like Stranger Things, for example, where it's like you get one of these every couple of years or every year at the most. And it feels like this is not like one minor installment in a slate of 10 different things, but this is like the thing. And let's just look at this for what it is. I kind of think that the perspective shifts. And like I was watching like Falcon Winter Soldier, which is something that we do not, like we don't consider to be one of the better projects. But like, I think it's not bad. Like I think especially like the Sam and Bucky dynamics after now, and this is what I texted you, like after Brave New World, and I feel like I've been so harsh about that movie lately.
You really don't like Brave New World and Falcon Winter Soldier is getting better in your mind after seeing Brave
in
New
retrospect.
World.
Yeah. Cause like the, even the stuff that I thought at the time was a little bit awkward, maybe it's just by comparison, but it feels like there's so much more subtlety in Falcon Winter Soldier. Like, the writing is better. The performances are better. Like Anthony Mackie is better to me.
I'm just not sure that I'm 100% sold, as I said earlier, on like Anthony Mackie as Captain America in that role. I think he just works better as Falcon. Not that Falcon couldn't have his own shows and movies, but like the sidekick who becomes really powerful, I think it's perfect. For some reason, I don't know what it is, I'm not totally bought into him as like the fixture Captain America. And I think the world isn't either. And I don't think Marvel is necessarily either, because I just think they're not leaning into it the same way they did with Chris Evans. And I get it's a different Captain America, but like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, writing all that stuff, I'm probably with you. I actually haven't gotten back to Brave New World ever. So I'll get there in my
yeah, life. I mean, I do my other thought, and then this is my last thing on my kind of retrospective, but to your point earlier about Black Widow, it is, this has nothing to do with Harrison Ford's performance, but I think it's one of those things where I'm just not sure that I can really connect William Hurt's Ross with Harrison Ford's. Like, I can't quite make them be the same character.
Okay.
And I, just because they're different types of performers. They made the choice to not have the mustache, which is kind of like the signature thing of that character. And so there are just things where I'm like, man, I think that like Falcon Winter Soldier, on the one hand, I don't think it does anything really other than introducing John Walker. It doesn't really do anything that changes where Sam and Bucky are from where they were at the end of Endgame. So in some ways, it's kind of a skippable thing. But I at least kind of like I really like Sam's journey and seeing him process through what it means to be Cap. I like the Isaiah Bradley stuff a lot. Like, I think that there's some good stuff in there. To me, I think it set up a great, like, it gave a good launching pad, I guess, for Sam to be a compelling Captain America. I just think that I'm bummed now because Brave New World really felt like it didn't have anything to say, or like it didn't, like, I look back on the Chris Evans trilogies and it's so cool to me how each movie is clearly like, this is like Steve trying, like all he wants to do is like be in the army, and then he gets there and he realizes that he kind of has to go against authority, and that's not really where he belongs. He's like something apart from that. And then he has the same experience with S.H.I.E.L.D. And then Civil War is him having the same experience with the Avengers. And it's this thing where he's always kind of like, he's living in this tension and he's having to figure out like how to do the right thing against the weight of authority often, or against the weight of his peers. And it just feels like there's this very clear arc, and I don't know. It's a bummer to me that they kind of started something with Sam that I think they just sort of dropped, and makes me curious to see like what they're going to do with that character in Doomsday, because ostensibly he's like the leader of the
A
kind
team.
Of Avengers.
Yeah. Okay, 2026 and all of that goodness. We'll be right back. All right, so whenever we do these lists, the funny thing is, if I have something at 8 and you have something at 5 and we go every other, it's hard to know how to get into a discussion if you want to save your talking points until 5 and I'm saying I'm at 8. And so I think the way to do this time is I'll just do my list 8 to 1 and briefly say a couple things, and then you do your list, and then we can kind of share overarching thoughts if that works. That way there's not suspense when you go, oh, that's my number 2. And I'm like, oh, that's my number 6. Oh, yeah, okay. So by my count, there are 8 potential projects next year. Now, what's interesting is I don't think we have a final release date on the Punisher special. I don't think we have a confirmed release date on X-Men 97 season 2. And just recently, apparently Disney took the specific date for Daredevil Born Again off their calendar. Now, they're not going to push it back, but it might not, they're not going to push it back like a year. But it might not come out that exact time anymore, or it's just like a, I don't know, an oversight. My point is, this is a little bit conjecture. So I'm going to go with 8 projects, assuming they all come out, but it's possible we only get 5 or 6 of these. Okay. So the 8 options then are Wonder Man, Punisher Special, Daredevil Born Again Season 2, Spider-Man Brand New Day, Vision Quest, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, Avengers Doomsday, and X-Men 97 Season 2, which, by the way, I've made this contention before, so this is not what it's about today, but it has potential to be the largest year in MCU history with the kinds of products that are coming out, the amount of them, and the break we're coming off. It could potentially be the biggest year they've ever had. And I know we've tossed that out before, but like in 2022 or 3, when we kind of tossed that out, I feel like some of the attention was already kind of waning culturally. So it ended up maybe not meeting that expectation. I think there's been enough down period between just Deadpool and Wolverine last year and then the spaced out shows now that this could be the beginning of it ticking back up, like we talked about with Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four, so that this year might then catch it at the perfect time. Okay. Okay, so here we go. I'll go real quick so this doesn't drag out forever. Number 8 for me, I think, would be X-Men 97 Season 2. I'm anticipating or excited? 3, 2, 1. I'm excited about all of these projects. So just because I have to number them doesn't mean I don't like it. It's like I've been in such a drought. That Avengers Doomsday trailer is going to hit so hard. And then I think we're just going to start rolling and I'm going to be excited. So no matter what, I thought X-Men 97 season 1 was amazing, but just by the nature of it, I'm a little bit less invested for an animated thing. And especially an animated thing that's kind of with characters, X-Men, that I do not have much history with, even though the first season's awesome. So that'd probably be my number 8. Number 7 would be the Punisher special on Friends from Work Plus. Neil did an episode called Kyle Listen, and he suggested that I watch The Punisher, which I will now report. I am 3 episodes through The Punisher show. So I am doing it.
Okay.
I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So I think by the end of the show, I'll probably be a little more invested in The Punisher special. As of right now, very intrigued to see where it goes because of the follow-up with Daredevil, but you know, investment level probably the lowest of any of the live action for me things. Fun character. I've only ever really witnessed him, again, not through the show yet, kind of as a sidekick, if you will, to Daredevil. So it's that's an interesting one. Number 6 for me is Wonder Man. Now, I am excited because creatively it looks like it could be very, very, very different, which I think could be fun. There's always the chance when it is very, very different that it's a flop. I think I'll be invested, but again, very few characters I know nothing about Wonder Man. The I've been, you know, pretty pleasantly surprised with the fourth wall breaking, like, meta commentary shows like She-Hulk and Deadpool and Wolverine. And this seems like maybe it's kind of one of those, a little meta. I'm excited for the week to week again. I'm probably most excited just that it's coming up the quickest, but probably number six for me. Number five is Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Part 2.
Nice.
Just because that really surprised me. I really enjoyed the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to follow up. Because that was a nothing burger show to me until we put it on. And then Annika and I really enjoyed watching it every week. It was a fun thing for Annika and I. Like it became like a date night each week. So that was a big plus. Daredevil Born Again, season 2, number 4 for me. Mm-hmm. I love the first season. I love all the Netflix stuff. Daredevil is always a weird one for me, as we've talked about. It's so brooding and so dark that I have to get to a certain place to want to watch it. When I'm watching Daredevil or The Punisher, it doesn't feel like I'm even watching the same world or genre as the Fantastic Four. And I just kind of prefer the Fantastic Four, if that makes sense. It doesn't feel superhero-y to me. So I'm very excited. Yeah. But to get to that really dark, like, head-crunching place, it takes me a little bit to kind of get back into the swing of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I would be more excited to see Daredevil with someone else. Like, let's have Daredevil show up in Spider-Man, and then that will be more fun.
Yeah.
Like, in the tone of Spider-Man, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that was so fun about that appearance in Friendly She-Hulk. Neighborhood Spider-Man. She-Hulk. Yeah.
Yep.
It's just kind of nice to see
him off his territory a little bit.
Yeah, it's just, it's very weight of the world always.
Yes.
Like, it is. It's, you never it's really heavy. Get to see. Yeah. Like, and there's something to be said. Dan Gavazdan actually made a comment I think he was maybe talking about Marvel movies in a positive way, but just how, like, there is something really nice about a hero versus villain story where the hero is a good person and wins. Like, I think that there's, like, it's really easy to be like, oh, that's so simplistic. We need our heroes to be complicated and morally gray. And
it's also, it's like the origin of some of the earliest stories of humankind, like people like good versus evil and good winning.
Yeah. So it's just like, there's a reason why that stuff feels good. And I think that, like, there are reasons why people need those stories. So yeah, I get where you're coming from with that feeling different.
And then here we go. My top three. Number three, I'm going to go with Vision Quest. Because of what you set up earlier, I never thought I would say that. I am just now so invested in Vision. Maybe it's because right now I'm in the Age of Ultron, Civil War era.
Yeah.
As you said, I think WandaVision is going to increase that. I was team, let's not bring anyone back. He died. Let's not bring him back. Then they found a way to kind of pseudo bring him back in WandaVision. And now with enough time, I just miss that relationship. So I'm excited to see where this new robot went, and I want him back.
Yeah.
So that's my number three. That's my most anticipated over Daredevil show, I think, just because it's going to take me back to a world that I just like being in. And then these two are almost interchangeable. I'm going to personally go Spider-Man Brand New Day at number two. It's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be so fun to see Spider-Man. A lot of characters are showing up in it. It's going to feel like the connective glue within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And just like a ground level Spider-Man movie is always going to work. I'll be 55 years old and still watching ground level Spider-Man movies. It's going to work for me, but nothing is going to top my excitement for Avengers Doomsday, which is my number one. And it's just because of a couple things. One, we just haven't had an Avengers movie in so long. They just hit differently. They hit differently. And I think I've now come, this is my final takeaway. And we'll talk about this on the trailer, Robbie, but we talked about how Robert Downey Jr. is such a core to the MCU. You rewatch the MCU and you realize, oh man, there isn't an MCU without Robert Downey Jr. Yes, Tony Stark is important. Yes, Jon Favreau, the Russos, Kevin Feige, all these people are important. But Robert Downey Jr. may be the single most important factor. And so even though that decision to have him play Dr. Doom was so mixed, I'm now... I think culturally, I can speak for a lot of Marvel fans that I think the trailer is partially going to blow up just because people are going to see Robert Downey Jr. again in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So you're a little bit taking your preconceived notions of him as Tony Stark, which he's not Tony Stark, but you're taking that with you. So when you see him, it's not like you're just seeing a new actor. Like if you saw Cillian Murphy, it'd be amazing. I think he could do an awesome Doctor Doom. But there's going to be something a little bit different when you see his face, because you're like, oh, that is the MCU. And I understand that decision more and more the more you rewatch the MCU. And now I think I've fully fallen in that boat where, oh my gosh, it's just going to be good to have him back on our team.
Yeah. I mean, even if he's not on our team.
And Chris Evans. Yeah, you know what I mean? The Marvel team. And if Chris Evans is in it too, like, I don't care what they're doing. The MCU needs it now. We need it now. I mean, it's not the hero we deserve, but the one we need right now.
Wow. Yeah. So our list have some like key similarities and some differences, which is nice.
So why don't you just list them and then tell me your overall thoughts on it? Since I just did a long tangent, sorry.
So we have the same number 8, I think. And I want to make the same disclaimer. There have been years where projects have come out that I just really did not care about ahead of time, even if I liked them after the fact. Like
What If season even, 3, maybe.
Well, and even this year, like I didn't really have Eyes of Wakanda on my radar. I watched it and I thought it was great. But I wasn't, it's not something that I was that I had feelings about one way or the other ahead of time. Kind of the same for Zombies by the time we got to it. Yeah. And then we both wound up liking it a lot.
Yeah. I'm laughing because no I just like typed up my friendlies ballot and I forgot about Eyes of Wakanda. Holy crap. That's how nothing burger it was to me. I need to go back and add that in. I totally forgot as one of the projects. Okay, but anyways, yes.
I mean, like, yeah. So of all of these things, like I love the feeling that I'm ranking things too low because something has to go there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Like, so X-Men 97 is my number 8.
Like, think about if that does become the 8th worst project. That's what a gift. What a gift. If that is no longer like the best project of the year, like that year you're talking about, we debated, is it the most consistent project this year? No. If it's the worst project of the year, what a good year.
Yeah. I mean, and then, I mean, same for me, and this is where we shift some, but my number 7 is Wonder Man.
Okay.
And again, I don't want that to come off as me not being excited, because the stuff I've heard about the show, the trailers, everything looks really fun, and I'm stoked. I just think that, like, to your point, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which is my number 6. Okay. I would never have thought that I would put that ahead of any live action show, but I also got to, like, I was counting down the days to the next episode.
Yeah.
For that when it was out. More so even than like Born Again at certain points. So I'm excited about that. But The other thing that I have above that that's a little bit different than yours is the Punisher special.
At 5.
And we'll see. Like, I could see that being something that I really like and never revisit. I could also see it being something that's really special just because of some of the creators that are involved. I always love when the actors have a larger role in the creative direction of the character.
They really own it.
Yeah. And I think
like
John Bernthal
at this point is the Punisher and it's his thing.
And you know, that video that went around a while ago of him on set, like I just think, and like the videos I've seen of like the Battle Van and Brand New Day, I'm excited to get a little bit more time with that character ahead of that. And you know, for it to be kind of a straight crime drama from people that have a proven track record of some of the best crime dramas. Mm-hmm. And then right above Punisher, I have Daredevil Born Again season 2, which is my number 4.
Same.
And actually from here on out, we have the same list. And
oh, okay.
My number 3 is Vision Quest. And that's, I'm kind of surprised because I think a year or two ago, I probably would have flipped that in Daredevil.
Yeah, same. Pretty crazy.
But I part of it's WandaVision, like having just watched it. Part of it is like part what of it, I was part saying of it earlier, like
the amount of content for Vision.
Yeah.
Like we haven't had that much time with Vision. And, Daredevil, I mean, you have almost 100 hours probably of Daredevil now,
yeah,
if you want.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's crazy too, because like WandaVision was the first project after Endgame. And it ended with Vision flying off with White Vision. And we are now coming up on 5 years since WandaVision aired. And we have gotten no follow-up on that at all. So I think I'm just so curious. Like, I mean, that's like been the dangling thing since like literally day one. So I just think it's a... like seeing that, but also like, man, getting James Spader back as Ultron, which is something you and I have been asking for forever. Like that's going to be fun. Just getting a little bit more like, in a way, it's almost like a Tony Stark follow-up just by kind of getting the Iron Man AI crew back together. And I just have no, like the other thing is I have no idea what it means to have like an end to this WandaVision trilogy, because Agatha All Along feels like, as great as it was, such a different thing even from what WandaVision was.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, is there going to be a complete narrative at the end? Are we going to have some kind of like coming together of some of the threads from Agatha All Along with like Billy and Tommy? Or is it going to be something not at all like that? Is there any chance of like an Elizabeth Olsen cameo or mention or nod? Like, there are so many directions that they could take that in. And I know that some of the folks that I've seen announced working on it have really great track records again with these kind of sci-fi adventure projects. It seems like it's got all the right ingredients.
Really quickly, you've probably seen that Elizabeth Olsen is kind of out there and about there right now because of her movie Eternity or whatever. So she's doing all the press.
Yeah, I really want to see.
And then, we had a screener invite. And we almost went as like a date night because I was like, it's a rom-com. I think it'd be kind of funny, but we didn't go. And then I recently watched Weapons. And because of Weapons, Josh Brolin was in the media cycle. And I just think it's interesting, both of them. Uh-huh. During their media cycles, everyone's all like Gwyneth Paltrow literally yesterday got asked about Doomsday.
Oh, so
like, whenever
Marty
you're
Supreme.
Out there, yeah, whenever you're out there, you're going to get asked that. And both of them kind of like played it. They both were like, yeah, we would be back in a heartbeat. Brolin and Wanda, Elizabeth Olsen.
That's good.
So it just kind of interesting. Like, she still needs like the circumstances to be right. And, you know, the last time we saw her, she kind of turned into a cloud of magical dust or whatever. Anyways, just interesting because they're kind of like front and center right now culturally, and I keep seeing things like, yeah, I would do it in a heartbeat, but you know.
Well, and to go back to your to another one of your bold predictions, I saw, like, speaking of someone being kind of coy, did you see that little like snippet with Jonathan Majors where he was asked if he was coming back to Marvel?
I don't even think that those predictions were in my bold predictions episode. I think that was like midway through the year this year. I just said that, right? I'm still so right. Just prepare yourself. I'm very right about this. Yeah.
I don't know. I would not have thought that that was truly possible. But it could just be him, you know, knowing that.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really say anything either way.
Yeah, sure.
And like, and if he's not coming, why not? Yeah, like at least kind of get people looking at you.
There's so little you can glean from it, right? Because sometimes the actor takes the approach of literally lying. Like Andrew Garfield says, no, I am not in the movie. And then he just like specifically was in the movie. So you don't know that. Chris Evans has said, no, I'm not in. I wish I was with all my friends. Remember he said that? I'm not getting to film.
Yeah.
But there's heavy rumors that he's going to be in it. And I think he'll be in it. So there's like the straight lie. Then you get these like, Gwyneth Paltrow last night was like, we'll see. That's what she said. We'll see. And it's like, okay, so now I don't know. And that's kind of Jonathan Majors too. It's a little bit like, you get the, you also get the comment, like I said, with Brolin, where it's like, I would do it if, the, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You just, there's nothing you can, you don't know.
I do those top two, kind of what you were saying. I think that there's something interesting there. For me to close out my list, like, I think Doomsday is the riskier project for a lot of reasons. Like, one, it's just going back to the well after having maybe the most successful movie, I mean, ever at the time, but also, like, certainly into a franchise.
Endgame?
Certainly the biggest superhero movie ever.
I think you can say it's the most successful movie ever, for sure.
It's,
I know it got passed when Avatar went back into theaters, right. But it's the most successful movie ever.
My arch nemesis, James Cameron.
You also got to factor in the reviews too, which I think Avatar has mixed things. But like, not only the box office, but critically and audience, they're like, I saw critics that said, yeah, it's the best movie I've ever seen at the time. You know,
yeah. So. Well, and theater experience. I don't think anybody remembers their Avatar movie theater experience.
They remember, like, that it was 3D. Do you remember that? That's what they remember. Right. Which is crazy. But yeah, no one remembers, like, people cheering. That just doesn't happen.
I think it's riskier just kind of by default, but also
don't you think the risk has gone down because of the time? Right.
Yes, but then I think it's gone up because of them bringing Robert Downey Jr. back in. Like, in some ways, it's like if they had waited, and now it's just Avengers, and let's say it's just the Thunderbolts, like, crew, and now we have a new villain. I think people would kind of just be like, oh yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see what the next Avengers movie is. But now it's like, there's going to be a corner of the internet that's just rooting for it to fail. There's going to be another corner of people that are probably going to now be interested in Marvel for the first time in 4 years because of it. But all of that, I think,
I haven't seen it as much as we used to. You know, 4 years ago, when we were doing this podcast,
in fairness,
all I would see is that stuff. Now I just don't, I see a lot of people just excited. I don't see a lot of rooting against it anymore. I feel like moment's kind of died down a little bit.
Now, you know, I just look back, I remember the good stuff.
Yeah. But you honestly, jokes aside, you kind of agree. You feel like in general it's died down, right? Like, that kind of height of, like, fatigue kind of.
I think it's hard for me to say because I'm, the last time I was really on social media was the height of that. Like, I kind of got off whenever the Quantumania stuff was hitting the fan.
A representative of social media, and I don't live on it. It's not even close to the Quantumania era, I don't think. I think it's totally died down. Part of it's because they just have gone dark. There's nothing to get ramped up about. But anyways, I agree with you. It is risky, but I don't think it's as intense as it was, that feeling of like, oh, we got to get
risky.
Right.
I think it risky, not also in the kind of like I just think sometimes, like, I remember Candace, whenever they first announced Robert Downey Jr., her first joke was like, okay, so, like, Marvel's like, we're running it back, because in her mind, she's like, they need Robert Downey Jr. Like, that he's the star of that franchise. They tried to do it without him and they couldn't, and now they're going back to it. Now, you and I have talked about that. On the one hand, I think Candace would also, she's joking, but would also agree some of her favorite Marvel movies were post Robert Downey Jr. But on the other hand, what's so bad about a franchise needing a star? Like, I don't think anybody would be like, aha, see, Mission Impossible can't do it without Tom Cruise. We knew it. Like, okay, he's the star of the franchise. Like,
yeah, it's his thing as much as Robert Downey Jr. This is his thing.
So, but I think, so I wonder if there are people that are going to kind of be like that. But more what I'm talking about with the risk is just, in the same way, going into like the Avengers first and then into Infinity War, when it's like, what does it look like to juggle this many plot lines and characters? Like, Doomsday is again kind of upping that exponentially.
Yeah. Think about this for a second. If the plot of Doomsday is any version of Dr. Doom sees these incursions are coming, that theoretically means that there is an infinite multiverse. So at every planet he goes to, there could be a Thanos that shows up on every one of those planets, or a Scarlet Witch, or a Tony Stark, or a Natasha Romanoff. Like,
yeah.
Theoretically, if it was expansive and he was like, if there's ever a scene where he's like blasting through the multiverses, kind of like in Multiverse of Madness or like in Spider-Verse or something, you could get, like, I wonder how many of these characters are going to be just cameos. Like, here's this universe at the council, and in that universe, there's a Thanos. Or there's a, you know, for a second, but he's not the main character. Or even if it's like Doctor Doom, like, choo, through portals, choo, 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 and each portal's like, oh, there's a Scarlet Witch there, choo, Black Widow, choo, choo, you know, like, or whatever. Like, theoretically, they're in all of those. So yes, it's going to be expansive, but I wonder if almost, this is a weird argument, it's almost so big that they can get away with 90% of those things being cameos, and that's acceptable, right? Like, there's no way to tell a story about an alternate universe Thanos. But it'd be kind of fun if there's a tiny cameo. Like, you know, you're going through and you see him, right? You see what I'm saying? Like, you can almost get away with the best of hopefully both worlds.
But I do think we'll get some meaningful time with, like, the original X-Men. Because I feel like otherwise it would be kind of a disappointment. Like, they would be building that up if we don't actually get some, like, James Marsden screen time.
That's the rumor. That's the rumor, is that there's significant time with the original X-Men, Sam Wilson's Avengers team, the Thunderbolts, and the Fantastic Four team. That's kind of like the... Now, is there also maybe a Spider-Man universe team maybe or something? Like, there's still probably some stuff that they're going to save as a surprise.
Yeah. And then there's Secret Wars too. So it's like they could open up a lot of stuff. And but yeah, I think... And to your point, like, if you look at Infinity War...
Yeah, maybe Doomsday is just the beginning of this, and they don't need those other teams yet. Maybe Secret Wars is where they'll have their moment, let's say. This is just the beginning
I'm kind of hoping that they save any of the, like, Spider-Man-centric stuff for that, just because we will have just gotten a Spider-Man movie
when
Doomsday comes out, and there's still a lot going on. But to your point, like, looking at Infinity War, if you look, like, halfway through that movie, you have the kind of Earth Secret Avengers team and that ultimately winds up in Wakanda. You have the Guardians, who are kind of doing their own thing, like, with Thor, before they ultimately then meet up with, like, the Tony and
Captain America. Oh, yeah.
And, well, like, Tony and Spider-Man and Strange component. And then you have Thor, it kind of breaks off to, like, Thor and Rocket. Like, the teams kind of shift throughout the movie, but you could argue that you have four different main groups there too. And then Thanos, who's kind of, like, driving the whole plot. So you could have a similar setup with Doom and the four teams you mentioned. And as people that think Infinity War is incredibly coherent and, like,
maybe the compelling, best thing they've ever made. Yeah.
That I think, yeah, it could, but it's just so, it's so big. Like, for me, it's weird because the thing that makes it risky is also the thing that makes me so excited, because it could just be anything. And so we've gotten so many Spider-Man movies and so many Spider-Man projects, like what we've talked about with the games, with the Spider-Verse films, with Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. And they've all been, like, really every Spider-Man proper thing that has come out since Civil War, not including, like, Venom and Morbius and Madame Web and stuff, like, has been great. So I think going into next year, I am super excited about Brand New Day, but I think right now, from where I am, I'm not feeling the lack of Spider-Man in the way that I am feeling the lack of the Avengers. But I think what's interesting about that is there's a world where, even if Doomsday is incredible, where, like, in retrospect, you know, maybe Brand New Day comes out as just a better standalone movie, or it becomes, like, a thing that, like, I wonder if we should, like, revisit these lists, like, even apart from the friendlies, like, this time next year, just because I'm really curious how much of this is like the anticipation.
Well, this time next year, we'll be ramping up for that movie. I mean, 1 week later, right? 2 weeks later after this time next year. That'd be insane.
Oh, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
But January maybe of
27,
I guess.
And
that's what's interesting too, is there's a huge gap, right? There's no other film after that one before Secret Wars, as of now, at least, if they don't move something around. So we would have a lot of time post-Doomsday to talk about what does this now mean for Secret Wars and then reflect on what you're talking about. By the way, on this closing thought on the different teams, Infinity War, it's weird because I think all four of those teams you named, they kind of all hold a very important specific plot point. And so it's kind of like they're all actually advancing the plot of the movie, but you go from one and then you quick go see team B and they're advancing their plot. Then you go back to team C and they're advancing their plot and D. And so it's kind of linear, but they're all like, I mean, they're all each group is an important plot moving thing. Due to the multiversal nature, I just have this feeling that it's going to be less like four distinctive teams and more here's this team from this world. But amongst that team, Magneto's the representative, if you will. Right. So like, I think you're going to get some a shot of Nightcrawler. But it's not going to be like a Nightcrawler heavy movie. It'll be a shot of Nightcrawler as part of the X-Men team when they come to the council or when they come to stop Doom or whatever. Or even if it's like Doom, let's say the movie is Doom going to key moments where each universe messed with time and then caused an incursion. I think it'll be more like he's going to that key moment dealing with that person, but then that person calls upon his team to help. My point is like, it's going to be more of a Sue Storm movie and a Reed Richards movie, and you're not going to get that much of Johnny Storm. You'll get a few, like he'll be part of their team as a representative, but it's not going to be about him. And then the same thing for the X-Men universe. And honestly, the same thing for the On-Earth Avengers, right? Like I could see a sequence where it's Reed, Yelena, Doom, Magneto, and like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man or something. And those five are all talking.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I think that's true. And I mean, I do wonder if I kind of like that theory because you can look at Days of Future Past as the time travel moment for them. You could look at Endgame as the time travel moment for the Earth, like our Avengers. And then you don't really have to do that for Fantastic Four because I think there's an argument that they would maybe just be like if Doom winds up taking Franklin, you know, it could just be that.
It's
like
less
they're chasing Doom.
It's less of a defensive universe for them and more just, hey, I want my kid back.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that I want to note, just because we've talked so much about Spider-Man and we're talking about Secret Wars and everything, full circle for me, I guess. Finishing the Infinity Saga and heading into Far From Home next to my rewatch. I do love the Tom Holland Spider-Man so much. And I really love the way that, unlike with Captain Marvel, where they introduce a character right before Endgame and then immediately kind of pivot her to be like this massive component of the mythology. I like that they introduced Spider-Man without ever really taking the focus off of the main Avengers characters, which is kind of tricky because Spider-Man is objectively the biggest Marvel character. Like there's just no getting around that, but they didn't let the weight of that character overtake what they were already doing. And that was great. But I do, like, even with all of the, like, Tobey Maguire stuff and Andrew Garfield and anything else that they want to do with the greater Spider-Man universe, I kind of hope that in, like, either Doomsday or Secret Wars, probably Secret Wars, that Tom Holland's character gets, like, a real front and center role. Because we talk about kind of the remaining characters that we're really invested in. And I say that I'm glad that they didn't let that character overtake the work they had been doing in the MCU to that point in the Infinity Saga. But now it kind of feels like because they've given him his like origin trilogy, we will now have like Brand New Day. Tom Holland's so great in the role. Like this kind of feels like the time to let Spider-Man become the center of the MCU in the same way he's always kind of been the center of the Marvel Comics universe. I don't know if that'll happen, but that's kind of like a little like a secret wish of mine that's no longer a secret.
Right. The only hard part is that we've talked about Spider-Man works better when he doesn't have other super powered individuals. Like there's no Avengers in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. And so there's something about that that's nice. So it's kind of, I guess it's a hard line to find because a hard balance to find because you're wanting him to be the center of it while also acknowledging that the character works better without there being others. But the fact is there are others.
I think that you're totally right. But I think that what I mean is like, it's like when Chip Zdarsky was on the podcast, I think he talked about how he views Spider-Man as the moral center of the of the Marvel Comics universe.
I remember that.
He's definitely not the strongest. And it actually doesn't work when you overpower Spider-Man. Like you kind of need him to be an underdog.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's sort of that like I'm thinking of the Endgame scene with Cap where he's kind of standing down Thanos's army. Like that's a scene where you could put in Spider-Man. Like,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like Cap wasn't going to be able to.
Right.
But it's
fascinating because, you know, Spider-Man is the largest character in the Marvel universe, is what you said, objectively.
Yeah.
But I would argue that he's not the largest character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe just because of how they started it. So
yeah,
that Thanos showdown needed to be Captain America and specifically Iron Man earlier, too, in that movie.
Right.
But to your point, is there now, with those two spots being vacant and Thor being off-world for the most part, mm-hmm. is there now a role for him to be that in the future? As a representative of this world's Earth, can he talk to Dr. Doom as like the moral compass? Yeah, that'd be cool. It might also just be like a screen time thing. And I think it's a maturity thing. Like the trilogy is about him kind of growing up. And I don't think that version, the Homecoming version, doesn't work as having conversations with Dr. Doom. But to your point, I think it does now. If they take that tone with him, think about like Into the Spider-Verse, the older Peter kind of being like the, the moral center kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean like the leap of faith kind of moment in the first, in the first movie.
There's a version probably.
When we get either as part of it or to kind of cap it off, when we finish our Marvel 101, like comics discussions on Plus, I do think it'll make sense for you and I to read the Secret Wars comic, maybe between Doomsday and Secret Wars coming out. And there's a moment like that is a comic that's very much about Reed and Doom, which is how I could see like the Secret Wars movie ending. But there is like a kind of memorable Spider-Man moment in there. That's a kind of an example of like, it's not him having some like grand, powerful face off, but it's just kind of this like quiet character beat that only really works for Spider-Man. And even if it's something like that, but like ultimately I hope that whatever happens that we have, like it ends with a setup for like more of Tom Holland's Spider-Man for however long he wants to do it. Because I think that like we're just entering this era where things could start getting really, really fun.
I love it. Marathon episode today. What a good one. Those are our thoughts. Those are our 8 projects ranked from 2026. Let us know in the comments. Literally give me a list of your 8, your most anticipated Marvel projects of 2026. Leave them in the comments wherever you're listening. Be sure to subscribe. Tell your friends about Friends from Work. Next year is going to be massive. Thank you for listening. We love all of you guys, and we'll see you next time here on Friends from Work.